Good afternoon, it's 5:45 and it's a very wet day as usual in Cork in Ireland, and I've just come out of a hotel where I spent the last 6 hours working and being available for people to contact me face to face and being available for people to contact me online. And what do? But I turn on my iPhone to check up on, you know, are there any interesting podcasts on the Audioboo platform, and there is Claire Randall playing some lovely music by somebody I haven't a clue who they are, I didn't have time to check, and saying that she's going to raise a sort of serious question in a way that wouldn't be too serious, or whatever she did actually mean by all that part of her message. But basically she's raised a number of curiosities in relation to online and offline world, and in a way I think there's too much in what Claire Randall raised in one Audioboo, and it would have been easier to deal with if she had kept it to only one. So I'm probably going to just do a bit, but I want to say that I want to also address the last part of Claire Randall's audio, which was about what something she called morbid, although I think it's probably totally normal, which is about what on earth will happen to your online presence when you die. And that's worthy of another topic, I think. So this audioboo will probably not contain anything that Claire Randall would regard as morbid, and will confine itself to the day-to-day life of a guy and musings of a guy who lives both online and offline. Question, really, I suppose, to start it off, Claire raised, is something to do about, do the two talk to each other? Well, I just cannot imagine my life at present without being able to slip easily from online and offline. There are people I have never met in my life. I'll give you two examples off the top of my head. Diane Brogan and Steve Brogan live in Las Vegas. I have never met them. I think that I have more knowledge about what they do than I have about a whole lot of people I know face to face. I certainly have a firmer knowledge of, you know, what kind of human beings they are through our, not just our one-to-one interaction online, but the interaction between them and other people. And I just picked, these are two people who, well, they're big in my affection, but they're kind of almost randomly chosen. I've never met them. I have, you know, I think I'm a normal person these days in which you have emotions and perceptions and imaginations about people who you've never met face to face. Just as in the old days, when you spoke to somebody down the telephone but you never actually met them, the same thing happened. Or also in the old days, as in when you had a pen friend, you exchanged letters between you, you never actually met them. And there's a wonderful book about, I think it's called 84 Charing Cross Road, which is a book, a collection of letters exchanged between two people over an extremely long period of time, and the two people knew each other via their letters. And there are many, many examples of that in literature anyway. So I think it's a continuation of a tradition that humans have always had, that they enter into relationships with people who they have never met face to face. I bet you that when people were using smoke signals to communicate with each other, all sorts of perceptions were built up on both sides of what each other was like or not. So I don't actually see the internet as being a dramatic transformation, but it does vastly increase the power of connectivity. And anyway, everybody's right about that. It would be very boring if I went on about that topic. But all I want to say is that I think that, just speaking out of my own experience, the online and offline are normal. And now, would my wife be interested in a chat with me about the people that I have been in touch with on Skype today, the people I have been in touch with via Twitter, Audioboo, Google Plus? I these are the main ones I use, I have to say. I'm not a big Facebook user, but I do use it as well. No, my wife wouldn't be interested, but neither would she be interested in the people who I've spoken to face-to-face today either, and any more than that. She'd only have a certain amount of interest in my life. She isn't interested in all the minutiae, but she would actually be very interested and is very interested in, for example, the fact that I'm going to a conference in Chicago at the end of June. I'm going to be speaking with people there, and I'm going to be speaking with people who I have never met face-to-face before in my life. And she is interested in that. And I think, you know, she knows that I'm a digital maniac, depending on what phraseology I want to use about it, but that I use digital a lot, you know. And I'm not saying I use it more than most, because I know a lot of people use it a lot more than me. The fact that other people don't know people who use it more than me is a different matter, but if you pick a guy like Ted Rubin in the United States, and you look at the number of tweets that Ted Rubin communicates with, it's way more than me. So that's my defense against the charge that I do too much to Twitter. But anyway, the point is, these are... okay, on one level, you could say that these... Who are these people that I have digital contact with or internet contact with? And the short answer is that they are real people. They are people who have a profile on the different... let's talk about social media, on the different social media. They have a profile, but they're real human beings. I don't think Audioboo exists, for example. I think that Claire Randall exists. I don't say good morning to Audioboo. I'd say good morning to Claire Randall. I'd say good morning to Paul Hopkins. I'd say good morning to Jane Boyd. I'd say good morning to Roger Overall. I'd say good morning to Bernie Goldbach. I'd say good morning to these people, some of whom I've met and some of whom I haven't met. And to me, they're all real. And I, you know, have already said something, I think, before. Certainly I've said it privately, but I may have said it publicly, that people sometimes talk about I'm giving up Audioboo, or I'm giving up Voicebo, or I'm giving up Instagram, or anything alike. To me, I feel a certain, almost like a cringe of pain when I hear somebody say that, because I think, you know, if somebody said, you know, I'm going to give up on these 9 people on the estate, I'm going to leave them, I'm going to have nothing more to do with them, you know, you'd think, oh God, why are you breaking relationships with real people? There are real people at the end of all these social interacting platforms, social sharing, some people call them. There are real people there, and there are real people who have feelings, thoughts, feelings, histories, emotions, etc. And they're every bit as real to me. Now, I've had, you know, quite a few, lots of times when I began connecting with somebody and the only thing I knew about them was their blog post. I could tell you this about Jane Boyd in Vancouver, for example. She wrote a blog post, I read it, and I had a reaction to it. So I responded out of my reaction. I sent her an email, I think, or I didn't. I sent her a comment on her blog or whatever I did. I used one of these digital technologies and, you know, I'm not going to go into what happened next, but just to say that Jen and I are incredibly good, firm friends, and we've collaborated, and we're going to do more collaboration. And when I see her in Chicago June, I'll give her the hugest hug I can possibly give anybody. So, you know, there's no way that Jane Boyd is an abstraction or a figment of my imagination. And that is, I mention that as an example, really, just as an example. I mean, Jane will understand, you know, how dear a friend she is to me. And, you know, and she's helped me. She's helped me with situations which I was finding difficult to deal with. You know, people help me via the online, you know, offline and online. People help me with stuff in my so-called offline world from my online world. You know, when I suffered with severe depression, there were people who did things connected with me in some way via online. And they helped me. They probably didn't know how much they were helping me, and they probably didn't realize how much they helped me. But so the whole thing is the... Now, I began a long time ago. Well, not a long time ago. I began in 2005 on the internet in earnest, if you like, as a blogger. And I didn't put my own name up there in any form. You know, I was Omani Blog. Nobody, it wasn't written down anywhere that I was Paul O'Mahony, or O'Mahony, as I say it. O apostrophe M A H O N Y, and I did that because I, to a certain extent, I was out of concern for the possibility that I would bring attention in some way to my family, and I felt that look, if I, you know, cause any kind of a fuss on the internet, and it can be traced to who I am, you know, Ireland is a very small place, and you know, I need to be, you know, I don't want to be, you know, putting stuff in front of my family and saying, is it okay to post this? Is it okay to post this? You couldn't do that. At least I couldn't do that. I couldn't, you know, seek approval from the wife in order to publish a blog post about, you know, how difficult I was finding it to cope with the culture in Ireland after moving back from the UK to Ireland. I couldn't, the fact that I was finding it difficult didn't mean she was finding it difficult. I was very, very careful not to ever imply that, you know, any of my experience was anybody else's experience. But, you know, if you're operating in a village, you know, the consequences of being online and offline, they merge into each other. So that would have been naive of me if I hadn't considered all that. And there have been one or two incidents which I've, you know, probably will never disclose properly or fully, in which, you know, things have happened online and have had offline ramifications. And there was one occasion, and only one to the best of my knowledge, where I took down a blog post. I took it down. And I'm one of these people who says, look, if you publish something in the public domain, it's in the public domain, and, you know, I and everybody else, you know, have to appreciate that if it went in the newspaper, it would be published, and so if I put it in my blog, it's published, or anywhere else. So, you know, the notion that once you put something up in a blog post, somebody gets in touch with you and says, would you mind taking down this or that? I'm very, very, very reluctant to interfere in any way with something that has been published already on the grounds that somebody doesn't like it. I don't think that you can get away with that in the offline world. And of course there would be some situations where, you know, you might. But redacting some stuff, I'm not a redactor. And also once something is out there, it's out there. It's just very little chance you can ever kill it once it's published. So I'm weaving away from what you started with, aren't I, Claire? What else did Claire raise? I'd have to re-listen to it, but the whole point is really about the connectivity between the two. I think there is some repository of the past which is going around, and it probably is a generational thing, I think. You know, and I mean that I don't think young people of 17, 18, 19 to the age of 30 have this point of view, but and it is that, you know, for example, that the real world is the face-to-face world, and that the unreal world is the stuff that's. I don't think that bound that dichotomy exists in the minds of young people, or certainly if it did, I think it's less and less and less all the time. You know, people are now in the mindset of the two working together, and I kind of see it as a, I know it's going to be a terrible cliche, as a pair of glasses. In other words, you have digital glasses. You can see things without glasses, let's say, but you can also put on a pair of glasses and see something else at the same time. So I don't regard it as the worst of all manners when somebody I'm talking to during the conversation, while holding their smartphone in their hand, actually brings into the conversation the information that, oh, look, I've just got a tweet from so-and-so telling me that that they're going to do X, Y, Z. I regard that as a bit like, you know, that isn't such a terrible thing to happen. I wouldn't be. I actually find it more personally offensive if I could ever be offended, and I'm not really a person who gets offended very easily. But some people have the view that when the telephone goes, it must be answered. In fact, I think that's the general view. You know, the idea that because the telephone rings, it should be answered is bizarre to me. I mean, I don't answer the telephone unless I want to answer the telephone, or unless I look down at it and I see that, you know, it's something extremely unusual, like, you know, what looks to me like a matter of life and death or something. But even then, I'd be slow, to be honest. I don't regard the fact that the telephone rings as a reason to answer it at all. But I do notice that a lot of people don't hold that point of view. And that means that rather than, you know, like you would on a smartphone, picking up a tweet from somebody and saying, oh, look, so-and-so has just said this or that, and you integrate the that kind of digital communication into your face-to-face conversations, rather than it working like that, what actually tends to happen on the telephone is somebody says, oh, excuse me, I have to take this call, and they then leave you. And you're standing there, left wondering when are they going to come back or what's going on. Now, to me, this is a much more serious concern than, you know, is it bad to have a telephone or a smartphone at the table and be updating your Instagram in between courses in a meal? Now, there are some people in whose company I would never do that, and there are some people in whose company I feel great relief that I can do it because I love keeping a record of and sharing food. You know, and I do also regard seeing landscapes and everything like that as fair game as far as connectivity is concerned. And anyway, I'm somebody who does think all the time about the fact that I'm living here in Ireland and there are people living in Australia who are in a different time zone, and it might be interesting for them to actually see what the sunrise in Ireland is like, just as they're having sunset in Sydney, you know, that kind of a way. I think I'm probably at the extreme end of the whole thing. I'm not such a bad-mannered person that I don't listen to people. I mean, the other side of it is you could easily give the wrong impression when you're talking about this in this kind of a merging way, that you start thinking, well, you know, there isn't any attention being paid. But I don't want to claim to be the world's most attentive person, but I do believe that I attend reasonably well to people in face-to-face conversations. I do listen kind of fairly attentively to what other people have to say, and I don't spend half my time going through the motions of nodding at people but actually thinking about the football match at the same time. I you can see it on somebody's face when they're not in the conversation with you. It's obvious, nobody can fake it, is my opinion. I think we unconsciously suss each other out and realise when attention is not being paid. Nobody's a good enough actor to pretend they're paying attention. That's my experience. But anyway, this is a long way from death, a long way from the morose stuff that Claire raised. But I would like to address this the death issue, Claire. But that is for another occasion, and in fact, maybe I've mentioned it too often, because it doesn't matter. I dig a hole, stop digging. Okay, look, thank you very much, Claire Randall. I'd love to know, was that who was that music by? Could it possibly have been by a band that I... could it have possibly been the band? Okay, bye.